Okay, the off 10:15 have arrived. I'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Joy, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have.
The minutes have been moved. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are passed. Okay, we have a full agenda today, a good agenda today. We will start off, well, first of all, I think the most important thing of today, with all the very important bills we have, including a chairman's bill, probably the most important thing, though, is to introduce the pages. I think that would be good. Pages, want to stand up? Now, I think the young lady there is from Eden Prairie? Eagles. Oh, that's you. Yeah, okay. So let's go. Let's start way left there.
I'm Sam Green. I'm from Houston. My representative is Johnson, and my mascot is a Raider.
A Raider. Good.
My name is Mark Anderson. I represent the city of Lions. And I live on the Academy in Wisconsin.
Lions.
Okay. My name is Aisha Long. I go to Eden Prairie High School. My mascot is an eagle. And my representative is Representative Cozo, I think.
And she's considering Winona State for her secondary education.
Yeah, okay. The right area
of
state.
My name is Eldred Kusma. I go to De La Salle High School in Minneapolis. I'm an Islander, and my representative is Andrew Griffin.
All right.
My name is Nikki Vinicius. I go to Minnetonka High School, and my mascot is the Skippers. I'm represented by Representative Brown.
My name is Andrew Kusma.
Just wait, Jeff David, man? Oh, no, sorry. Okay, let's go.
My name is David Christensen. I go to Woodbury High School. I'm a mascot of the Lion, and my representative is Representative Buck.
My name is Victoria Felka. I go to Eden High School. My mascot is a Wildcat, and Representative
Wonderful.
I'm Jasper Ewind. I go to Minneapolis Southwest. Our mascot is a Laker, and my representative is Jamie Vaughn.
All right. Got everybody? Didn't the co-chair go to Minneapolis South?
I did, yeah.
You
Tigers.
Did? Tigers. All right. All right. Thank you, everybody. Glad you're here. It'd be a good week for you. Okay, so I will move House File 1669. We've got quite a few testifiers there. And I would like Mr. Clayman to describe the amendment. I will move the H1669DE2 amendment. Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1669, as amended by the DE2 amendment, would modify the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Credit. The Sustainable Aviation Fuel Credit provides a refundable income tax credit for Minnesota produced sustainable aviation fuel, which is sold for fueling aircraft that are departing from the state. House File 1669, as amended, would increase the amount of credits that are allocated per year, would extend the sunset for the credit, provide an additional credit for fuel meeting certain carbon intensity reductions. Carbon intensity goals, and would also provide for some additional qualifying requirements.
Okay, thank you. Questions on the DE2 amendment? And just so members are aware, not that we have to do this, but this would put it the same language as the governor's bill and the Senate bill, but I don't think we can mention the Senate in committee. So, but that's what it would do. Questions on the DE2 amendment to get the bill in shape I'd like? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended. We have several testifiers here. So basically, is the DE2 amendment the bill, or is there a lot more to the bill than just the amendment? Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE2 amendment is the bill.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so let's start out. We're going to start. We're very fortunate today to have one of the governor's commissioners here, Tom Peterson. If you would please present your testimony, then we'll go to Ann Schwagero. I'm going to need help. We'll let her tell us who she is. Okay, and then we'll go to Dan Gleason, Tom Radovich. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
I sat over to the side, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. There's Schwagel, Mr. Chairman, if that helps. So glad to put that in there. I'm here to voice strong support for the administration's support for House File 1669 as amended with the DE2. We appreciate the ability also to work with the Department of Revenue in building a strong support for this SAF package that's both a policy and funding package in changes. As you just heard, the bill provides additional funding in 27 and 28, as well as out years of 29 to 35. This helps maintain Minnesota's leadership in the sustainable aviation world, and also gives companies that are considering Minnesota time for to decide what those incentives are and how they fit into their project. It also extends the SAF credit from 2030 to 2035, which is also very important as those companies look at long term and decide on what kind of certainty we have. It also adds environmental guardrails. It also builds on the nation leading SAF tax credit that we passed in 2023. And I think that's an important point, because as we look at what other states are doing around us, Iowa, Nebraska, Colorado, Arkansas, North Dakota, Washington, and Illinois all have SAF state credits. Last week, in fact, Wisconsin Governor Evers signed into law the Forestry Revitalization Act that provides $120 million in tax credits for a facility that would turn woody biomass into SAF. This bill, I think, was designed to drive private investment into Minnesota or into Wisconsin and away from Minnesota. You know, I'm not as always competitive, but I am kind of competitive when it comes to this. When I meet with our other commissioners and we look at what's going to happen with SAF. SAF's going to happen, you know, and in some cases it could happen in our bordering cities. And as our producers and our resources are grown here, whether that's crops or timber, we want them to stay here and be processed here in Minnesota is a top priority for me as we look at that. And I think this amendment works to capture that. We need to maintain our strength and our competitiveness. As you know, SAF is a cleaner alternative to traditional petroleum-based jet fuel. It's a renewable fuel produced using materials such as woody biomass, waste wood, agricultural crops, and cover crops like winter camelina. Very important. We have companies like Cargill, who are a Minnesota company investing time and money into developing camelina, which would be a part of that. Once produced, SAF is ready to be a drop-in to the existing fuel transportation infrastructure and the current aircraft engines as a supplement. Mr. Chairman, members, during the session, we heard from lawmakers and stakeholders that there should be additional environmental safeguards incorporated into the existing credit. And we really had a great coalition of people that worked together. You'll see a letter in your packet that looks like this. And if you'd look at the folks that signed the letter, it's a pretty unique coalition. And I'm really proud of that. They actually kind of call themselves the SAF Squad, which I think is really, you know, helpful. And they've done good work coming together that I think will help make Minnesota a leader. We've collaborated, MDA has, with the Department of Revenue with, as I said, this large and diverse stakeholder group to craft updates to the existing SAF credit that address key concerns. The coalition supports include environmental, agriculture, forestry, clean energy, and economic development nonprofits, as well as our labor partners. The diversity of this coalition indicates how important it is for the SAF policy to get the SAF policy right in Minnesota. We have the opportunity to create positive benefits from many sectors, and you're going to hear now from all of those coalition members. So thanks for your consideration, and be glad to answer any questions, or we have great staff here that can do that too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions for the commissioner? And thank you so much for being here and testifying. Is this the first time in history that the governor's commissioner has testified in favor of one of my bills? No, there was another one about 30 years ago. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner. Let's go with Ann Schwagel.
There you go. You got
Schwagel.
It.
Schwagel, got it.
Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Schwagel, and I am a farmer in Big Stone County. I run a diversified grain operation where we raise corn, soybeans, wheat, winter camelina, and covers. As a mid-scale grain farm, we're always looking for ways to be creative and stay competitive. I'm also honored to serve as the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union. Farmers Union, along with many other ag organizations across the state, supports this bill as amended with the environmental safeguards and the potential for a new sustainable aviation fuel sector here in Minnesota. To add to this conversation, I want to talk about why, as a grain farmer, I'm excited about SAF and what it could mean for our family farm. I'll start by talking about our work growing winter camelina, a cover crop being developed by the U of M Forever Green Initiative. We plant this winter annual crop in the fall after we harvest our other crops. And this is important to us for two reasons. First, the crop allows us to keep our soil continuously covered throughout the year, protecting our soil from wind and water erosion over our harsh Minnesota winters. Second, it's another crop that we can market to help our farm cash flow and support our family. The camelina on my farm is crushed, and the oil from it is refined and used locally at MSP as a drop-in replacement for petroleum-based jet fuels. Beyond winter camelina, we're also continuously looking for and experimenting with other ways to increase efficiency and lower the carbon intensity of the other cash crops we grow, including using low or no-till production, cover crops, and precision agricultural practices like gridding and variable rate fertilizer application. We feel like this is a win-win-win opportunity. We've got a new market and are improving our farm, we're protecting our environment, and we're lowering the carbon intensity of a difficult to decarbonize sector of the transportation industry, helping to meet our state's climate goals. We're facing a crisis in farm country right now with low crop prices, high input costs, and the loss of international markets. This is an opportunity to create a new domestic market for our agricultural products that will be meaningful to farmers across the state, as well as the next generation of producers. This is true across a variety of crops that could be feedstocks to SAF, including cash crops like corn and soybeans, along with new crops like winter camelina. Finally, I sit on the Governor's Advisory Council on Climate Change. SAF will help our state meet our state's climate goals by decreasing the emissions associated with the transportation sector, while also encouraging climate-smart practices on agricultural and working lands. This is, again, another one of those win-wins that can create a more resilient landscape and reduce emissions across sectors. Thank you for taking the time to hear from the many partners that are involved in this effort today, and thank you for your leadership on this bill.
Thank you so much. Questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Dan Gleason, and then Tom Radovich, and then Steve Morse. Mr. Gleason.
All right. For the record, my name is Dan Glessing. I'm a dairy farmer from out in Wright County. I also raise corn, soybeans, alfalfa, and oats, and I have the pleasure of serving as Minnesota Farm Bureau President. We're a nonpartisan general farm organization representing over 30,000 members. I'm here to express our support for HF 1669. One of the biggest challenges we face as farmers is access to strong and reliable markets for our products that we raise. Sustainable aviation fuel presents an opportunity to build another domestic market for Minnesota agriculture at a time when farmers are facing tight margins, uncertainty, and growing pressures from all directions. Creating new demand here at home benefits farmers directly. It helps strengthen commodity values, supports more processing and value-added activity, and gives farmers another pathway to stay competitive in an ever-changing economy. But the benefits do not stop at the farm gate. Strong agricultural products also benefit our rural communities. That includes more economic opportunities in greater Minnesota, including new investments, increased business activity, and additional jobs tied to processing, transportation, and infrastructure. Policies like this help ensure the value created by agriculture does not leave the state, but instead stays here, supporting local communities and economies. Let's make sure the Minnesota farmers are part of this growing market rather than watching the opportunity go elsewhere. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the bill, and I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
And thanks so much to the witness. Questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Tom Radovich, Minnesota Forest Industries. Please proceed. Identify yourself.
Yes, my name is Tom Radovich. co-chair David's co-chair Gomez, members of the committee. I am the executive vice president for Minnesota Forest Industries. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Forest Resource Council that represents all the forest stewardship stakeholders in the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to support House File 1669. There's a hidden natural resource scattered throughout our state that could help offset a significant portion of transportation emissions. In Minnesota, millions of tons of forest residue and wood waste are underutilized. Forest landowners are in desperate need of market for unmerchantable wood that has now become a cost burden to them for the first time in generations. Commercial technology exists today to extract the components of wood and synthesize hydrocarbons for fuel. Wood-based biofuels provide some of the lowest carbon emission fuels due to the unique properties of trees. They have a high carbon density and they have a high sequestering potential. Wood-based aviation fuel is a win-win proposition for the environment. Low-emission biofuels not only reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, but also improve forest health that's critical to maintaining a good carbon sink. In the past decade, the number of forested acres diseased, infested, and damaged by severe weather events has increased from 300,000 to now 1.2 million acres. That's 7% of our forested land. All these acres have become prime wildfire fuel, as we saw last May, just almost a year ago now, when we had 30,000 acres of spruce budworm infected trees that burned around Brimson County and in Lake County. A better option is to create a market to remove this decaying material and use its fuel potential for driving aviation. A wood-based SAF biofuel industry is within our reach in Minnesota, but it requires long-term incentives to attract developers. Pioneer technology companies are looking for a partnership with the state of Minnesota as they scale up designs and scope out different sites to create a sustainable circular economy. I thank you so much for the time, and I'm open to any questions you might have.
Any questions for the witness? Okay, Senator Morris, how you doing?
Great.
Good to see you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chair Gomez and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today before the committee, and thanks for the opportunity to talk. My name is Steve Morris. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. MEP is a statewide coalition of more than 70 environmental and conservation nonprofit organizations and other groups that align with MEP's mission and collaborative approach. We advocate together for clean energy, clean water, clean transportation, and a healthy environment for all Minnesotans. I'm testifying today in support of House File 1669 as amended. Earlier this year, our coalition voted to support this legislation because we feel these amendments to the SAF tax credit provide important safeguards for the development of a SAF industry in the state. The production and use of SAF could have dramatic impacts on multiple environmental challenges we face. That is, if it is done right, and these environmental safeguard amendments support getting it right. From a clean water quality perspective, SAF can help jumpstart adoption of a major new winter hardy oilseed crop that can be integrated into our current cropping systems, protecting our soil and water during the critical early months of the growing season. With its early vigorous growth, we can see a dramatic reduction in the loss of agricultural chemicals from row crop fields, effectively addressing one of our most intractable and persistent water quality challenges we face. And the good news is, farmers will be growing a crop they can sell, effectively growing their own incentives. In addition, these crops provide an early, high-quality food source for pollinators during the critical early growing season, and this is before we even touch on the highly significant lower carbon intensity of biofuels made from winter hardy oilseeds. So there is great potential, but again, SAF has to be done right. That's why the guardrails, such as the language which prohibits the use of SAF-generated gases to be used in the extraction of other oil, are so important. These work to reduce the potential adverse effects of SAF production and provide extra incentives for the sources of SAF that provide the greatest climate benefit. That's why our coalition supports this legislation. The bottom line is that SAF with guardrails is better for our health and our natural resources than SAF with no guardrails. We urge the committee to support the bill as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Any questions for Mr. Morris? Thanks so much for your testimony. Let's go now to Megan Anderson, and then we'll go to Angela Baines, I believe. Ms. Anderson. And then we will go to Colin Curitan. Now, while they're getting up there for the new members, I've always said that if the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau are for something together, you just, probably a good idea to work with them. Probably a good idea. Okay, please identify yourself for the record.
Co-Chair Gomez, Co-Chair Davids, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Anderson, and I'm the Biofuels Policy Manager with Friends of the Mississippi River. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the amendment. Why is a river organization working on SAF? We recognize that SAF policy has enormous potential to influence environmental outcomes in Minnesota, including the health of the Mississippi River. There are two primary reasons why House File 1669, as amended, can benefit water quality. First, FMR supports SAF because of its potential to expand the market for continuous living cover crops that reduce agricultural runoff and protect water quality, like winter hardy oilseeds such as winter camelina and pennycress. These are crops that turn into low carbon.
Excuse me, what was the second one you said there?
Domesticated pennycress. It is another crop from the Forever Green Initiative.
Oh, of course it is, yeah.
These are crops.
Please continue.
These are crops that turn into low-carbon SAF while also improving water quality, soil health, and biodiversity. Because of their strong potential as a SAF feedstock, a growing SAF industry could be what allows these clean water crops to expand across the landscape. Second, the environmental guardrails in this legislation limit land use change and incentivize lower-carbon SAF by providing a higher tax credit for lower-carbon fuels. Taken together, these two guardrails can incentivize more climate-smart agriculture practices on our existing farmland. The climate-smart agriculture practices that can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, like reduced tillage, cover crops, and improved nutrient management, are the same practices that improve water quality and soil health. We see this legislation as an opportunity to scale up these important environmental practices statewide, which is critical to meeting our clean water goals. The SAF tax credit is greatly improved by these proposed amendments and will help Minnesota lead the global race to reduce aviation emissions while protecting our lands and waters. We encourage you to support House File 1669 as amended. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Anderson? Thank you for your testimony. Let's go now to the next witness, Ms. Baines, and then Colin Curitan, Tom Dicklich.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Anjali Baines, and I lead the transportation team at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a more than 30-year-old clean energy advocacy nonprofit based in St. Paul. We are here today in support of House File 1669 as amended, particularly the tax credit adder for cleaner SAF and language that will ensure non-biomass SAF, such as power to liquid, which is made by combining green hydrogen with carbon dioxide, are eligible for the tax credit. Power to liquid SAF is considered by international climate experts to be the SAF most likely to help long-haul aviation meet 2050 climate goals. This is due to its very low carbon footprint. It has 90% fewer climate emissions than conventional jet fuel, coupled with its ability to scale and be used as a wholly drop-in fuel in existing commercial aircraft, which are typically in operation for over 20 years. However, power-to-liquid is earlier in its development cycle, meaning it's currently more expensive to produce than waste or crop-derived SAF. Thus, the timeline extension proposed alongside the tax credit adder and eligibility language is crucial to getting this ultra-low-carbon SAF closer to market competitiveness with conventional oil-based jet fuel, similar to other clean energy tax credits for solar and wind took years to work. With power-to-liquid facilities being developed in other states like North Carolina already, now is the time to make sure Minnesota doesn't miss out on building the ultra-low-carbon SAF industry we will need to meet our climate goals. Thank you, and I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Let's go to Colin Curitan, Tom Dicklich, Andy Campo.
Co-Chair Davids, Co-Chair Gomez, and members of the committee, my name is Colin Curitan, and I am the Director of Commercialization, Adoption, and Scaling at the University of Minnesota Forever Green Initiative. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1669. Forever Green develops and commercializes winter hardy annual and perennial crops to help farmers keep the soil covered all year round, which we call continuous living cover. These continuous living cover cropping systems can deliver a wide range of environmental benefits while also giving farmers new sources of income. Two of our leading crops, winter camelina and domesticated pennycress, have high potential to be used as feedstocks for SAF among many other potential end uses, including other renewable fuels, animal feed, bioplastics, and plant-based protein. Both camelina and pennycress are winter-hardy crops that can be planted in the fall, after crops after harvest of crops like spring wheat or corn silage, then harvested early the next summer. By relay planting or double cropping, farmers can grow a second crop in that same year, such as soybeans or dry beans. Over time, these crops could be grown on millions of acres in Minnesota. By growing over the winter and early spring, these crops provide a wide range of environmental benefits. First, they cover the soil and sharply reduce erosion and prevent nitrates from leaching into our waters. Second, they flower early in the season, providing sorely needed resources for pollinators and other wildlife. Third, the oil from these crops can have very low carbon intensity and can be used to produce SAF with low greenhouse gas emissions. The promise of these crops is threefold. Number one, a highly scalable homegrown source of SAF. Two, a new revenue stream for farmers. And three, a powerful tool to sustain soil health and water quality in Minnesota. While camelina and pennycress are unique in having strong environmental co-benefits baked in, the environmental guardrails included in this legislation support a SAF industry for all feedstocks that enhances stewardship of Minnesota's soil, water, and wildlife. This bill would help scale up these environmentally friendly crops and continue recent progress on building a robust Minnesota SAF economy. It will send a strong signal that Minnesota is a good place to invest in future SAF supply chains. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I've got a question for the department. Is Ms. Bears here? Let's get her. She should be in here.
Well, I have a question to ask now.
Oh, certainly. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair.
For Mr. Curitan?
Yes, for Mr. Curitan.
Okay, great.
Because I think he's the representative from the project at the University of Minnesota.
Oh.
Right. I think, yes, this was part of your introduction. So it says Forever Green, but that's an initiative. And I think that's just important because it's our research facility for this. I mean, because my question is just about, you know, how this will happen. I mean, the tax credit is on the books. It hasn't been claimed yet, and I know, you know, we adopted the DE2 today, so it's a new bill, different than the one that the committee had discussed. You know, so my question is, right, like, how, if you could comment, just based on research from the institute, you know, how, I guess, how much would this bill help? How would it accelerate, you know, our path to actually getting SAF to be, you know, scalable and like usable? Because my understanding is, right, like it's not possible right now because it's just not scalable with some of the crops that do have good CI scores, like winter camelina. And so, like, I guess my question is, like, what is different?
Mr. Curitan.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Representative. I'll mention a few things briefly. The first is that the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota carries a multidisciplinary crop research and development team that is continually improving these crops in their agronomic performance, their yield potential, very similar to the way you might think of renewable energy technologies. We're doing that work to accelerate the research and development around these crops so that they perform better for farmers. Secondly, the team that I manage, the Commercialization Adoption and Scaling Program, is an intentional effort to integrate that research and development program with farmer adoption and market development. And we actually have a project going on right now, which is a shared cross-sector scaling roadmap called the 1 Million Acre Scaling Study that has a lot of momentum. Our next gathering is on April 21st, and it is a pathway to scale this up in a coordinated manner across sectors, which history might suggest is very important to have that shared cross-sector scaling roadmap for new agricultural technologies. And then third, I would say that a strong regulatory environment, especially for solutions that could offer a lower carbon intensity. Right now, my understanding is that it's a flat tax credit, right? And so this additional premium, you might say, would further incentivize crops like winter camelina and other low CI technologies that would further reward crops that have a lower CI and environmental benefits.
Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So last question. Right, because also you mentioned like your specific focus is commercialization, and I guess I think that's where, you know, I am a little bit skeptical because the facility in like Luverne was just sold, and I think there maybe is a facility being built now, and so yeah, like my question is just You know, we heard someone mention earlier SAF is going to happen. But like, you know, my question is like, well, where's the infrastructure for that, especially because this other facility that was supposed to be, you know, that first step is now being sold. So, you know, I don't know what will happen there. Right. So if you could comment on that. Thanks.
Yeah, Mr. sure. Burton. Yes. Briefly, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but just to mention some of our partners that are at the table. We have a strong coalition partner in Embold as well as the SAF hub. Which has really rallied the aviation industry and the processing and refining industry to the SAF opportunity. Another important dimension is that refiners to build a single infrastructure project, it will be a multi-decade asset, right? And so the security that they can be provided on the regulatory environment to build that facility is really important. And we've also had major retraction on the federal front. From facilities that have been incentivized through things like the Inflation Reduction Act. I also want to mention that one of our major agricultural business partners here in Minnesota, Cargill, I don't speak for them, but they're highly invested in being a leading supply chain partner. And we also have seed companies, input companies, and fuel refiners from around the country that want to partner with us. So my phone and inbox is, you know, having things come to it almost every day from industry partners that want to participate in this effort. And I think this strong regulatory environment that can be provided to build and maintain those infrastructure assets will be very valuable to incentivizing crops like camelina that have even a further carbon intensity and water and soil co-benefits.
And Representative Lee, you still have the floor, but I think our witness number 11, Peter Frosch, might be able to answer some of those questions on the infrastructure type thing. So. Do you have any more questions right now, Representative Lee? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Cureton. Tom Dicklich, Andy Campo, and Peter Frosch. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1669. My name is Tom Dicklich. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council, representing over 70,000 skilled workers in the trades across our state. Our members build the infrastructure that drives our economy forward, and we see firsthand how policy decisions like the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Tax Credit passed in 2023 can create real opportunities for Minnesota workers. That credit has positioned Minnesota as a leader in sustainable aviation fuel, helping meet global demand while laying the foundation for a strong SAF economy right here at home. A critical next step in ensuring that SAF production happens in-state, whether through new facilities or retrofitting existing ones. This will mean good-paying jobs and long-term economic benefits for our members and our communities. We've already seen what's possible. Last year, DG Fuels announced the first SAF production facility in Minnesota, a multi-billion dollar investment in Moorhead that will produce 190 million gallons of SAF per year. That investment happened in a large part because of the SAF credit this legislature put in place. House File 1669 builds on that success by extending Minnesota's SAF tax credit, further cementing our state's leadership in this industry. The long-term vision for Minnesota and the SAF hub includes as many as 5 facilities across the state. Each facility represents significant capital investment and thousands of construction jobs. In fact, estimates suggest that building just 3 facilities could create over 50,000 jobs for Minnesota construction workforce. This is exactly the kind of opportunity we should be embracing, one that positions Minnesota as a leader in a growing industry while putting our skilled tradespeople to work. That's why the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council strongly supports House File 1669. Thank you.
Thank you so much for testimony. Any questions for Mr. Dicklich? Thank you very much. We love the trades. Let's go to Andy Campo.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez, members of the House Taxes Committee. My name is Andrew Campo, President of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1669. The Minnesota Pipe Trades Association is an umbrella organization representing nearly 10,000 men and women working in piping-related industries throughout Minnesota. Our members perform mechanical construction and repair work, including plumbing, pipe fitting, HVACR service, gas distribution, and sprinkler fitting. As we continue to see our country gravitate towards a more sustainable future, we believe SAF to be an important step in that direction. What House File 1669 has the potential to create for us is the opportunity to build and maintain an entire new industry in our state. With the potential for multiple sustainable aviation fuel hubs across the state, creating tens of thousands of jobs in the construction industry, the majority of these being for our members. The SAF industry and construction of these facilities will keep our members employed for years. Having an opportunity for employment that lasts years is a luxury our members don't often get to experience. The constant work they perform on a daily basis can be taken for granted and go unrecognized. Our members are often referred to as temporary workers, even though they keep the lights on, water flowing, houses warm, and lives safe with fire suppression systems. At the end of the day, however, they are not looking for any credit. They just want to be able to perform their duty, utilizing the high level of industry-specific training they have received, and go home to their families. We appreciate the work this coalition has done surrounding this opportunity for them and their families. We also appreciate Chair Davids bringing this legislation forward and for all the committee members' time and consideration today.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Any questions of the witness? Thank you very much. And I'm going to, let's see, our last one is Peter Frosch. Is there anyone else from the audience wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Okay, please proceed.
Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Peter Frosch. I am CEO of Greater MSP, a public-private partnership working to create more good jobs for Minnesotans. To do that, Greater MSP builds and leads innovative cross-sector efforts, including the Minnesota SAF Hub. When I first spoke to the legislature about sustainable aviation fuel in 2023, SAF was a bold idea for how we might create a new source of prosperity for Minnesotans across the state. Just 3 years later, because of the actions of the legislature and the hard work of the people that you've heard from now, SAF is no longer just an idea. It is about to become a reality. The first phase of Minnesota's SAF economy begins this year. When construction of the new SAF blending facility near the airport is completed, SAF will be brought into the state, blended near the airport, purchased by airlines, and flow into planes at MSP International. We will all be flying on planes fueled with SAF in Minnesota months from now. We will soon have one of the world's most sustainable airports. This is the first win for Minnesota with SAF, and it's a remarkable accomplishment for which many organizations deserve credit. Today, Minnesota is America's leader in the race to build a SAF economy. To stay in the lead, we must achieve a few key milestones this year, including passing this bipartisan legislation, which ensures we have the nation's smartest policy and enough dollars in the tax incentive to meet the ready demand, because that incentive will start being drawn down this year. This legislation also keeps us on track for the second big SAF win for Minnesota, which is producing SAF in the state. That's where the jobs, new tax revenue, and new markets for crops and byproducts will come from. The Minnesota SAF Hub is actively working to develop multiple SAF production facilities in different parts of the state, making SAF from as many as 10 different feedstocks. These feedstocks are not competing with one another because global SAF demand is so high. Eventually, we aim to make SAF in Minnesota from all of them. To produce SAF in Minnesota from any feedstock, we need private sector companies to decide to invest, build, and hire here. As of this month, we are working with over 20 different SAF producers from around the country and the world. Every producer is watching this legislation because it contains the clarity and certainty they need to have confidence they can be successful in Minnesota. We are competing against other states for these investments, as the commissioner explained. We're on the road to transforming Minnesota's economy. We're on the cusp of another crucial step forward in that effort. Thank you for being leaders in this work.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Now, members, we'll come back to Representative Lee right now. Well, right now. We'll come back right now.
Thank you, Chair, for your indulgence. Hello, Mr. Frosch. I used to work with your sister, Elizabeth Frosch, so, yes, nice to meet you in person. My question is about something that you just mentioned. I think one of the questions that we have is also, you know, how do we make sure that, you know, if we decide to invest in SAF, that this does not drive up the cost of food for people, which, you know, a lot of folks are experiencing now. You know, what are like the guardrails to prevent that?
Mr. Frosch.
It's an excellent question, and that's essentially the package of guardrails that exists in the bill that are being considered today, help ensure that does not happen. There's a long answer to that question, and there's a short answer. And the short answer is
the short one.
Shorter, yeah. That is not necessary to produce, you know, hundreds of millions of gallons of SAF. ultimately in Minnesota. And that's where the many different feedstocks come in. And for feedstocks like corn or soy, you know, which are part of the food system, there are ample amounts of those commodities that do not require any diversion from the food system or the use of new lands that are not currently in production.
Rep. Savalee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, and I think, you know, when we had this hearing last time, like, my preference would be, right, to look at winter camelina and right, other crops that have a better CI score or better environmentally. I think the question is that that's not scalable, and you know, at this point, right, it's not scalable. And so, you know, one question that I asked folks when we met about this is there's nothing in the bill saying that, you know, this tax credit is for winter camelina. And so, you know, the industry might, you know, go into corn or go into, right, these other, or go into soybean. And so I think like that's the concern, that like the tax credit is written the way it is, and it doesn't say like we're just investing in winter camelina. And so I think that's more of a comment, but I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Mr. Frosch?
Briefly, understand the interest. You heard from different feedstock producers on this panel. The key answer there is that the definition of sustainable aviation fuel, it has to be 51% carbon reduction life cycle. That means that producing SAF from any input is incredibly hard to do. And this is why this SAF is expensive and mostly doesn't exist in the United States today, because it's hard to do it, because it's hard to hit that score. So that the standard of SAF is a very high standard that ensures that anything that is produced and qualified as SAF has met those rigorous standards. Ultimately, I mean, winter camelina, penny cress, wood waste, all of these are in the plan. If we, camelina, to your point, will take years to develop, and the study that is going on right now is key to doing that, we can get started with other feedstocks in the next 2 and 3 years so that when we have the industry going in Minnesota, as soon as camelina and pennycress and others are ready, it can flow into that system. If we don't do that, then the market won't exist for camelina or those other crops 5 and 6 and 7 years from now.
Representative Lee. Representative Harder, and then I see no other questions so far for us, and then I'm starting to look at the clock here too. So Representative Harder, Morris, and Norris.
All right. Thank you, Chair Davids, for authoring this great bill. I appreciate that. This is a good day for agriculture, and I appreciate being a room full of people who support agriculture and for the testifiers who support this legislation. SAF supports agriculture and rural communities, so naturally I support this bill. As someone who is in agriculture, this would greatly benefit people in my district, along with many other districts throughout the state. So it's been said before, but I'll say it again, this is a win-win-win for agriculture, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. And my goal with this is to produce so much SAF that we can supply Wisconsin. Representative Warwas.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, just a quick comment about the driving up food costs. That would be a concern. And, you know, coming from the Northwoods where we have an awful lot of trees, it was said earlier about woody biomass being used. And that's something that I can really appreciate. You know, that my focus and support for SAF is really centered on the value of forest management. And woody biomass has the lowest carbon score, and it wouldn't drive up food costs. And so I can appreciate that about this bill. Another benefit, you know, is for our folks in the timber industry and our friends in the building trades. And full disclosure, one of my daughters is an IBW electrician. So, you know, technically, you know, people in my region that do her work would also benefit from building out these kinds of things. So appreciate you bringing this bill. Appreciate the testifiers today.
Representative Morris, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're talking about mainly agricultural crops, but I think wood is going to be a big factor here too. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And, you know, one of the challenges I
think about when we're doing legislating here at the Capitol is that, you know, we are constantly just trying to, we have so much information that's being put in front of us. You know, we run from committee to committee, taking up multiple bills at a time, and, you know, you're just trying to respond to what's immediately being put in front of you, that we don't always have the opportunity to step back and take a look at kind of a broader environmental scan, assess the broader context in which we're legislating. But when I do that, one of the things that is concerning to me is the fact that when you look at the data, our growth here in Minnesota has been lagging over the last several years. And, you know, reasonable minds can debate about what the reasons for that are. I agree with some, disagree with others. But when something like this is brought before us that does present an opportunity to lead to growth in our state, leading to jobs in our state, I think Minnesota is uniquely positioned to capitalize on this trend toward sustainable aviation fuel. I think it is worth us strongly considering how we can try to capitalize on this opportunity that exists to drive growth in our state, produce jobs for Minnesotans. And I think that's part of why you see, you know, the broad coalition that's come before us today. I've also heard, you know, from Jobs for Minnesotans, other groups about this. And I also appreciate some of the changes that were made in the DE. I think the additional environmental guardrails are helpful. But this is something that I think definitely warrants serious consideration, and I think presents a unique opportunity for our state that we should take a hard look at.
Thank you, Representative Norris. To my friend from the North, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. It's great to see all of the ag friends up here in Texas. This is a complicated area of discussion. And I've heard the phrase win-win quite a lot today, but I do think it's worth taking a moment to talk about the complicated nature of this new market, because there, a lot of the benefits that we're talking about today are true. Air travel is something that we really don't have any idea of how to decarbonize well. There's no electronic airplanes coming down the pipe. It's true that cover crops have tremendous environmental positives. And one of the huge barriers to large-scale adoption of cover crops is that there's really no market for cover crops that we currently have. That's very true. And the same is true of the woody biomass we talked about. There's no market really for that runoff, and so it would help to create a market for our logging industry. And it's true that our farmers are losing international markets because of irresponsible tariffs coming out of our current administration. All that is true. I think SAF does have some potential positives in that respect. But at the same time, I don't think we can pretend that we live in a world that doesn't have a checkered history when we talk about biofuels. Ethanol, gasoline had a lot of similar promises and followed through on some of them. The price of corn in the last three decades has risen primarily because of ethanol demand, but it has also, as was mentioned previously, lowered our overall food production with our agricultural land into ethanol production. It has created more markets for a monocrop system that doesn't support these cover crops that we've been talking about for the large part as it currently is produced. It also, this industry, corn specifically and soybeans, is a heavy addition of our greenhouse gases. It produces a lot of greenhouse gases in our country. Ag is about 10% of our overall, as the United States, greenhouse gas emission. Ag accounts for 10% of it. And two-thirds of that comes from corn and nitrate fertilizer nationwide. Air travel, by the way, is 9% total of our U.S. emissions. So when we're talking about using one to help decarbonize the other, we have to really take that into account because the goal here is decarbonization. And it would take a tremendous amount of corn and soybean, because when we talk about feedstock, that's what we're primarily talking about, to bring about SAF fuel that would in any way fill up the demand for the 1.1 million gallons of aviation fuel that is used at MSP every single day. So there's a lot to discuss. It's not like a simple win-win, but I do think there are some wins here. So I'm not speaking against this bill, Chair. I think we need to enter this new market carefully. I think that's really important. Oftentimes we get so concerned about being the ones who get it first or getting the largest market share that we just throw a bunch of these tax incentives into these areas to try to get as much as possible without carefully going into these markets. So I think furthering the sunset is a good idea to make this facility a reality, to encourage private industry to continue to invest in these facilities. I'm not sure about more of our tax resources being put into these incentives that haven't been claimed yet. But I just want to take a moment, Chair, to talk about this is a large issue that would have huge ramifications in our ag space that we need to do so carefully. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? We will have Chair Gomez wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So none of these tax credits that exist have been claimed. Not a penny of them, and we are proposing adding $10 million more to the pot. Whenever there's a corporate tax benefit in front of us, and that's what this is, we are told we have to compete with our surrounding states. Wisconsin's doing this, Iowa's doing this. And what happens is that industry forces that we see in the room, a lot of new faces for us in taxes today, travel around the country and advocate for these state-level incentives. There's always, I mean, I can come up with a dozen examples off the top of my head, situations in our committee where there's been these two arguments. We have to compete with surrounding states by putting a bunch of public money into something. We have to provide certainty for industry, which means that we have to, even in a case like this, not a cent of this is actual money has been spent. There's always this push from the beneficiaries of corporate tax incentives to expand the incentive, to expand the, extend the sunset. And so, I really appreciate the complexity that Representative Smith surfaced, being like somebody who's more in the tax side than the energy and ag side, I'm not as familiar maybe with all of those trade-offs. I guess I just would, we have to proceed with caution. We've established a process in Minnesota whereby we have periodic reexamination of our tax expenditures, our investments, our corporate tax credits. And so, I think that the spirit of that, which we have passed and we have this, a commission that works on that, needs to be embedded into our policymaking work. And what that means is that when there's money that's been allocated to a tax credit that has not been used, like we maybe need to take a breath before we say, oh, this is the thing, we're going to put a bunch more money, we're going to engage in a race to the bottom in our with other states in our kind of tax policy and our corporate incentives. I'm hesitant about putting $10 million more into a program that already has money in it, where none of it's been spent, and there's no demonstration of whether it meets the goals of the, of the incentive that was established to begin with. So You know, I know there's ongoing conversations about this. Obviously, if you look at the authors on this bill, I'm in an extreme minority in the legislature, and in having just sort of a critical eye on investment in the tax in this kind of program, in a corporate tax incentive. But like, that's part of, you know, part of the work of this committee is really to bring a kind of critical eye to these corporate tax incentives that, you know, that once they kind of get established, there's this, there's a lot of momentum that, that develops around them, as we can see as we look around the room. So, so I really appreciate this conversation. Obviously, it's ongoing. And, you know, I think that as everybody's kind of said, it's like, you know, decarbonizing our economy is an important goal. And it takes a lot of different, you know, different tactics and strategies to get us there. And this will continue to be one of them. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to all the members. Just to wrap it up here quickly, I just want to thank the coalition for doing the job that they've done. If you ever would have told me that we'd have a list like this, from, you know, agriculture to the governor's office to the environmentalist, I would have said it can't be done. But it has been done. And there's a lot of people, I won't start mentioning names, there's a lot of people who've done a lot of work on this, have really hustled on this, and we need to get it across the finish line. So with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1669, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you to all the testifiers. Thank you, members. Okay, item next, we will go, I will move House File 4709.
It has an amendment.
And we do have an amendment.
How much?
Thank you, everyone.
Is it something we said?
Who spoke last?
You did.
No, thank you, members, for a very good discussion. Okay, I will move House File 4709. There is an amendment. Is that an author's amendment, Representative Mueller?
Thank you, Chair Davids, and yes, it is an author's amendment. Oh. I believe we had A1, but we needed to replace it with A2, please.
Okay, very good. I will move on behalf of the author House File, or the amendment, H4709A2. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. 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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us as amended. Two-year bill, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez. I think this is the first time I've been in front of the Tax Committee. So
your lucky day.
It is my lucky day. And it's lucky for you guys as well, because you get to hear this amazing bill. So today, the Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency is seeking a personal property tax exemption for two new natural gas power plants, the Austin Energy Station in Austin and the Steel Energy Station in Owatonna. While 4709, as introduced, was intended just for Austin Energy Station, the Austin Amendment that you guys just adopted combines it with Chair David's similar bill of House File 1773 to create a single bill that provides an exemption for both power plants. The personal property tax exemption for natural gas fired generation equipment is fairly common in Minnesota. Since 2000, the legislature has granted more than 20 personal property tax exemptions for generation projects. Granting the exemption will allow the facilities to be on level playing field with other similar power plants and will help keep the electric rates for Simpa's customers competitive with other utilities. The Austin Owatonna City Councils and the Mower County and Steele County boards have all passed resolutions to support the exemptions. And Mr. Chair, I have several experts with me who are willing to share their testimony, but also answer any questions.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for that presentation. And members, we have a packet that says a lot here. So on front, Austin and Steele Energy Stations. We've got the resolutions from the involved cities. And if you look at the one where it says approved property tax exemptions for attached machinery and other personal property at newly constructed power plants for the last 25 years, we've done a lot of these. This is nothing out of the ordinary that, you know, who thought of this idea. We've been doing this for a very, very long time to help these. Would you call us a peaking power plant, maybe? Or okay. Who would like to start, the Honorable Mayor or Mr. Hoffman? Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Gomez, members of the committee. I'm Joe Hoffman, Chief External Affairs Officer for the Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency, or SEMPA. SEMPA is a municipal power agency, a political subdivision of the state, and we provide wholesale energy and energy services to our 17 members. Our members are cities that operate their own electric utilities. These include Austin, Owatonna, Rochester, Preston and Spring Valley, and St. Peter, and even Grand Marais. Don't ask about our name. We like to say it came with the place. Municipal power agencies like SEMPA allow municipal utilities to achieve economies of scale and offer their citizens electric rates that are comparable to much larger utilities, coupled with exceptional local customer service, and we are very proud of that. I appear today to request respectfully your support for a personal property tax exemption for SEMPA's new Steel Energy Station in Owatonna and Austin Energy Station in Austin. While the Taxes Committee generally does not delve into energy policy, although you are today, I thought it would take a moment to explain why SEMPA is building a new peaking power plant. SEMPA, along with our plant co-owner, Xcel Energy, will be closing the very large Sherco 3 power plant in 2030. SEMPA will be replacing that coal-fired generation by making significant future investments in solar and wind, and that is to comply with Minnesota's new carbon-free energy standard. However, the agency and our members have a regulatory obligation to also ensure reliability when renewables are not available. And so to meet this obligation, SEMPA is building these two small natural gas turbine power plants in Austin and Owatonna. These are plants that may run just a few hours a day when wind and solar are not available, but in certain circumstances, like during Winter Storm Fern, these plants run for much longer periods of time. In the example of Winter Storm Fern back in January, we had a very prolonged period of no wind. So we had no renewable energy on the power grid, and so that was made up by dispatchable units like this. As was mentioned, since 2000, the legislature has granted more than 20 personal property tax exemptions for generation projects. And as the chair pointed out, the map, you'll see that those are spread around the state. Those are investor-owned utilities, municipal utilities, as well as cooperatives as well. So it is a broad group that has received those exemptions. The exemption does not apply to the entire value of the facility, only to the generating equipment. So the land and the buildings and the other electrical equipment are still added to the local tax base. And to illustrate the impact of this, in 2017, this legislature generously approved a personal property tax exemption for SEMPA's Owatonna Energy Station. For OES, which began commercial operation in 2018, SEMPA now makes annual property tax payments of approximately $66,000 to the city of Owatonna, $51,000 to Steele County, and $40,000 to Owatonna Public Schools. So these facilities will continue to pay real estate taxes. While estimates are not yet available, it's reasonable to assume that these two new facilities will provide similar property tax benefits to their respective taxing jurisdictions. As mentioned, the Austin and Owatonna City Councils, as well as the Moore and Steele County Boards, are in support of this exemption. To wrap up, SEMPA members generally view having a natural gas power plant in their community as a sought-after asset. It results in local construction benefits, property taxes, some job creation, and perhaps most importantly, local electric system reliability. The personal property tax exemption would also place the Austin and Steel Energy stations on a level playing field with other similar natural gas-fired plants in Minnesota and keep SEMPA's wholesale prices competitive with other utilities. Again, thank you for the opportunity to appear today. Thank you to Representative Mueller and Representative Davids for authoring the bill, and Representative Sexton for your support as well.
Yeah, I think we'll wait for questions. If you all three could stay up there. To Mr. Hoffman, could this be run on SAF? Might want to look into that.
Yes.
Okay.
Great question.
The Honorable Matt Jessup, Mayor, City of Owatonna, for your testimony, and then we'll go to Commissioner Jay Lutz. Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Matt Jessup, and I serve as the mayor of the city of Owatonna. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in behalf of the personal property tax exemption for SEMPA's proposed steel energy station. I'm here today on behalf of our community to express strong local support for this project and explain why it matters to Owatonna, not just as the host city, but as a growing regional center that depends on reliable electric service. The Steel Energy Station is a planned 49-megawatt natural gas facility to be located on the west side of Owatonna. For our community, this project represents a critical investment in electric reliability. As our city continues to grow with expanded manufacturing, healthcare, housing, and small businesses, reliable power is not optional. It's essential infrastructure. This facility will strengthen the local grid, reduce strain during peak demand, and ensure that our citizens can count on reliable electricity. Just as important, this project brings tangible local benefits. It will generate construction activity, ensure local employment, and even with the exemption on personal property, it will generate new property tax base for the city, county, and school district. At the same time, it positions Owatonna to support a modern, flexible power system that can complement renewable energy resources as they're added across the region. The Owatonna City Council, along with the Steele County Board, have reviewed the project and both passed resolutions of support for this legislation, believing it benefits both our community and the southern Minnesota region as a whole. Granting a personal property tax exemption will help utility rates in Owatonna and those of other SEMPA member communities to stay competitive, along with those offered by other utilities throughout Minnesota. In closing, I ask the committee to recognize clear local support for the requested exemption and the important role the Steel Energy Station will play in improving electric reliability and sustaining economic vitality in Owatonna and beyond. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Your Honor. You said this will be located, or somebody says we located west of town, is like north of John Deere, or where is it?
It would be in that region, yeah, just north of where the John Deere is.
Okay. And we have with us Representative Sexton, who represents Owatonna Waseca District over there. So, very good. Let's go to Commissioner Jay Lutz, Austin Utilities. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jay Lutz, and I serve as an elected board commissioner for Austin Public Utilities. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and speak in support of SEMPA's proposal for the Austin Energy Station, or AES. For the city of Austin, this project carries special significance. The Austin Energy Station will be built on the site of our former Northeast Power Plant, bringing productive use back to a familiar utility location and honoring our community's long history of local power generation. Most importantly, AES would return local electric generation to Austin for the first time in 10 years, a milestone our community strongly supports. AES is a proposed 49-megawatt natural gas facility that would strengthen electric service for Austin Utilities customers and provide critical load capacity during periods of peak demand, transmission outages, and winter storms. Having generation located in our community improves resilience and gives our utility greater confidence in serving homes, businesses, and essential services when reliability matters the most. Equally important is how this project comes together. Constructing and owning a facility of this scale would be extremely challenging for Austin Utilities to pursue on our own. Through SEMPA, Austin Utilities can partner with other municipal utilities to access shared expertise, spread costs, and manage risk. This collaborative public power model allows communities like ours to participate in major infrastructure investments that may otherwise be out of reach. The Austin Energy Station also brings local economic benefits, including construction activity and property tax base for the city, the county, and our local school district. For these reasons, the Austin City Council and the Moore County Board of Commissioners have both passed resolutions of support for this project's personal property tax exemption legislation. I respectfully ask for your support and thank you for your time and consideration.
And thank you very much. I see we've got a Husky, a Packer, and a Saint all up there, right? Hoffman, you're the
part
Saint.
Of a joke, Mr.
You're the
Chair.
Saint. Yeah. I talked to your wife, yeah. Okay, so let's go to member question. Or first of all, anyone else wish to testify from the audience? Does the Department of Revenue wish to weigh in on this one? Okay. Okay, let's go to member questions. Representative Ewing, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward. I understand this is commonplace. It's happened in, what did you say, 20 other cities across the state. It makes sense. I just did notice on the revenue note, and I know when we do a property tax exemption, it shifts onto other properties. So while I appreciate the language in 2.1 to 2.3 that requires the resolution from cities, did that resolution process also include ability for residents to comment, or was there some explanation of how this will shift? We see the revenue note on our end at the state level because we can exempt property on the front end or provide refunds on the back end, but cities are going to city. So not all people, the way property tax refunds are structured, qualify for that too. So some residents might not understand what that shift will look, personally look like to them. So do you do like a community engagement process on that, or how did that resolution come about?
Mr. Hoffman.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Davids, Representative. The agency worked with our member communities, attended city council and board meetings, had discussions with staff. There was not a specific community outreach, but it very much was done in the sunshine, so to speak.
So. Chair Yuki.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yep. Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. My questions were related to what Chair Yuki mentioned, but understandably, you know, I'm assuming the request for the tax exemption is to, you know, save costs. And so my question is, you know, how do we know that the cost savings get passed on to the ratepayers or people who are paying for the utilities, or like do we not know this?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a great question, and I never pass up a chance to tout municipal utilities and the value of having a customer-owned utility, as we like to call ourselves. So absolutely, affordability is a big concern for everybody right now, keeping, you know, grocery costs and energy costs affordable. And we believe this is an affordability bill. We believe that this lowers energy rates. And because of our model as municipal utilities and a political subdivision of the state, any savings that we experience when operating these facilities go directly to our ratepayers. There's no profit margin built in. There's no other entity involved. We are all public entities owned and controlled by the citizens of our community.
Representative Lee. Any other member questions? If not, you would like to wrap it up, Representative Mueller?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Davids. And
I'm sorry. Representative Gomez.
I apologize.
Okay, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez. You know, as I was listening to my testifiers, two very, I think, important phrases came out: modern, flexible energy and local power generation. As we start thinking about, as we have seen changes to energy policy in the last several years, we need to make sure that we have a reliable energy source, and this is going to allow that. And so thank you so much to my testifiers, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill.
And thank you for your bill. I will renew my motion. House File 4709, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Do we even have to vote on that?
No.
Somebody said about 10 years ago I missed a few votes. I just want to get a few more in, if that's okay. Okay, item next.
Staff will run in that term.
Will it?
Change
well, we need to put more money in SAF.
There you go.
Let's go over there.
Okay, Representative Joy, welcome to your committee. Let me get organized here. Representative Joy, the bill, Representative Joy and Knutson. Okay, what do we got here? Representative Joy moves House File 3531. And no amendments. Two-year bill, sir.
That is my motion. Thank you, chairs. Thank you, members. I thought this is similar to a bill last year we had, taking the delivery fees off of, you know, last year was LNG and LPG, liquid propane, and natural gas. This year, we're moving diesel exhaust fluid and fuel lubricants and petroleum off of this. And this bill, 3531, restores the intent we met last year, but it did not change. So, and with me today, I have my testifier, Dallas Fisher from Beulah, Minnesota, and I'll let him take it over.
Thank you. Please state your name, who represents for the record, please. But before we get going, is there anyone else in the audience wishes to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to make a statement? Okay. Okay. Please state your name and who represents for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dallas Fisher, and I represent Fueling Minnesota. We're a 100-year-old trade association representing more than 300 fuel marketers across the state. This bill, as Representative Joyce said, is fundamentally a technical correction. Last session, the legislature passed language exempting fuel products from the retail delivery fee. However, during the process, modifications were made that changed the statutory definitions and excluded products that were clearly intended to be exempted, specifically items regularly sold by Fueling Minnesota members, like gasoline and diesel. House File 3531 restores the original legislative intent. Additionally, diesel exhaust fluid and fuel lubricants are fundamentally fuel-related products, yet neither are currently defined in Minnesota statute. This creates an unintended gray area in how the retail delivery fee applies. While these products are essential in the operation of modern vehicles and fuel systems, they are not consumed as gasoline or diesel, nor are they retail delivery goods as contemplated by the fee. This bill provides clarity, aligns statute with practical industry treatment, and resolves ambiguity that was never intended by the legislation. Applying the retail delivery fee to business-to-business transactions like these was never the original intent, and this proposal ensures consistent and predictable treatment for our members. We respectfully ask for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We kind of missed that one last year, didn't we? That's just kind of a cleanup bill, but okay. Okay, questions for members? Would you like to wrap it up?
Thank you, committee, and I look forward to moving this bill into House File 3531 into the tax omnibus bill.
Okay, Representative Joy renews his motion. House File number 3531 be laid over for possible inclusion of the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Joy, and to Mr. Fisher. Item last. We're doing good now, guys. Okay, chiropractors. Okay, we have a Robbins bill. House File 4048, I don't see any amendments at all. Representative Robbins moves House File number 4048, and it'll be for possible inclusion. We'll be laid over. To your bill, Representative Robbins, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am pleased to present House File 4048, which will exempt chiropractors from the provider tax. I just want to give you a quick summary and then turn it over to my testifiers. As you know, 49 of the 50 states do have a provider tax, and the federal government allows us to have 19 different provider classes. Minnesota is the only one that taxes all 19 provider classes. Most states only tax larger institutions like hospitals, nursing homes, surgical centers. They usually don't tax the community-based providers, but Minnesota has been doing that. But last year, in the governor's proposal, they took chiropractic care out of the benefit set. So the chiropractors are now paying the tax even though they do not see the patients or cannot, you know, get reimbursed for seeing the patients. So I just want to say that that's why we're bringing this bill. They shouldn't be having to pay the tax when they are no longer able to see the patients. And my testifiers will speak more to that. There is another effort going on with Representative Gilman to restore chiropractors so that they can see the patients. So I have to say I'm for either solution, but the current situation is not acceptable. So thank you to my testifiers.
Okay, I think we're missing a witness. I don't see Kevin Goodnow on the list. Okay, that's, as my mother, God rest her soul, taught me, Gregory, sometimes you just have to live with disappointment. Okay, so to your witnesses, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Co-Chair Gomez and members of the committee, Representative Robbins for carrying our bill. I'm Dr. Adam Millsap. I'm a doctor of chiropractic, a small business owner, and the president of the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. Our association serves as a voice of the profession at the Capitol, advocating for both providers and the patients that we serve. I want to begin by addressing the recent changes to chiropractic coverage under Minnesota healthcare programs. The elimination of this benefit has had a direct impact on both providers and patients. We appreciate Representative Gilman's leadership on House File 3687, along with the bipartisan authors from this committee in your efforts to restore this benefit. We continue to engage in those efforts and remain committed to reinstating access for patients. However, the current situation creates a fundamental disconnect. Chiropractors are the only providers paying the care tax without reimbursement benefit to provide care for our patients. Nearly all chiropractors in Minnesota are either small business owners or are employed by small business owners. Having to use limited business resources on an inequitable tax to chiropractors is a real and immediate concern. So I ask this, how can our providers be expected to take on this tax and administrative cost while losing the ability to provide care to our patients that this very tax is meant to cover? That is why House File 4048 is necessary. Until the chiropractic benefit is restored, we respectfully request an exemption for chiropractors from the provider tax and welcome your support in restoring access. Thank you.
Okay, the next testifier.
Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4048, and thank you, Representative Robbins, for carrying the bill. My name is Dr. Christopher Joe, and I am a practicing chiropractor, and I am a past president of the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. In addition, I have also previously served as the chair of the Insurance and Reimbursement Committee for almost 15 years. This committee has served as a liaison for our profession and for the payer system. For years, Minnesota chiropractors have been managing and paying Medicare tax. With most practitioners in private solo practice, it can be very challenging for the practitioner to track and pay Medicare tax. This is a result of how payers pay chiropractors. Some payers will add the tax onto their payment to the clinic, and others will not. What adds to this burden is that some payers will lump non-taxable payments, such as Medicare, with taxable payments. Most of the electronic health care programs that chiropractors use are unable to sort what is taxable and untaxable. This results in many chiropractors paying the tax on the total received. Because of this, they do not have the resources in their small businesses to allocate time and money to do this manually. Currently, Minnesota chiropractors are excluded from seeing these patients who benefit from this tax. There are many clinics who have faithfully served this population for years, and now they have seen their practices decrease by as much as 70%. Their patients are now turning to more expensive forms of care to help manage their symptoms. For these chiropractors, it makes paying this tax even more difficult. House File 4048 aims to ease these burdens and to help these clinics better serve Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Could either of you stick around afterwards for a little bit? It's my left hip, my left hip. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. Thank you, Representative Robbins, for carrying this bill. I don't often, or if ever, disagree with the governor, but I don't think the answer was to cut chiropractic because it actually, in this case, it hurt our most vulnerable people. I believe most chiropractors tried to accept Medicaid. Is that correct to one of the testifiers?
Dr. Joe? Or
yeah, I think either one of us can answer on that.
Dr. Millsap.
Yes, thank you, Chair. From what we know, the strong majority of chiropractors in the state accept or were opted into the medical assistance program.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer, because that's exactly what we needed, is to hear something that you guys did participate probably more than our dentists do. And why this was the decision, I still don't know. I never really got an answer out of that. I think, and I get where you're going here, because we can't participate, why are we paying it? This whole program was made to get to providers that would accept Medicaid. You're definitely a provider. I think this would be a step backwards to pull you out of this. So I think we as a legislature have to have that talk with the governor and say this is something that's of value to us to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. My comments are similar to Representative Hewitt. I represent one of the poorest districts in the state, and I know I've met with chiropractors who service folks or who used to service folks in my district. The Medicaid reimbursement is really important, and so just want to react to the author's comment. I mean, my preference is certainly to reinstate the reimbursement, and I would just oppose this because, you know, I'd want that coverage back. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Agbaji.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of along similar lines, I know Representative Robbins, you talked about also supporting just having chiropractors reinstated under the Medicaid reimbursement. I'm wondering if you would put language in here maybe that says that they are exempt until that they are reinstated.
Representative Robbins.
Mr. Chair and Representative Agbaji, yes. And we had a full discussion of this when this bill was in the Workforce Committee. And I've agreed that I would absolutely have an amendment like that. We decided not to offer it today. But I know the language actually exists. And I know the Senate is also looking at that. I think all of us want chiropractor benefits to be restored. That would be the preference because it's of value to our families on medical assistance. But in lieu of that, this is like just trying to keep chiropractors alive. It's a tough small business environment. So,
Representative Bajay.
Yes, no, thank you, Representative Robbins. I agree with that. So I guess I would just say that whatever the discussion is on that language that does currently exist, that hopefully that continues to be in the conversation.
Absolutely.
Just so that way we're not just exempting folks and then leaving that out there. So.
Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Agbaje. Yes, that's absolutely our intent, and I look forward to those conversations. It went very well in the Workforce Committee, and I know I've talked to Representative Gilmore, and she's very much on board. So to the extent any of you are involved in these conversations in health committees or whatever, we need everyone's support.
I'm not on the health committee. I have seniority. Okay. Representative Howard. Tell Schumacher I said that. Where's Representative Howard? Okay, Representative Howard.
I'll be quick since I have similar comments. I appreciate, Representative Robbins, you mentioning you sort of see two options to a solution. Mm-hmm. I would echo that I think reinstatement is the solution to go. I'm actually a co-author on Representative Gilman's bill, and I've heard from constituents that this change has been, like, truly devastating to their health. And there's a preventative care mechanism. I have a constituent who was born with a birth defect without arms. And for her particular condition, she's found that chiropractic care is critical. And without it, risks further medical interventions and things of the sort. And so lending my voice to that the real solution is to restore the access piece and worry that I do a bit of a worry that going down this path just sort of moves us further away from getting to where we actually need to go, but fully on board with the effort, hopefully on a bipartisan basis, to get to the conclusion I think that everybody's saying is the right place to end.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Robbins, for bringing this forward. I remember you bringing it forward in the workforce, and I agree we need to fix this, but I think I go to a chiropractor on a regular basis just for maintenance. It helps me, especially when you're trying to get around down here. But I think we need to move forward with this just because in talking to chiropractors, they said, you know, why did this happen, you know, and why are we still paying in? So they're either, if you're going to do what you did before, that's fine, but then why should we still keep paying in? And I think, as it was Representative Hewitt mentioned too, don't know why the governor went the direction and why we took the action we did, but that's unfortunately the way things work down here. So I think we have to not wait to bring fairness back to hoping that something else happens. And I think, you know, if it goes back the other way, then yeah, you know, then the fairness is we participate again. And I know you guys will be in support of that. So, but I think we can't wait and hoping that the other thing gets fixed while we continue to charge and do this when they can't take advantage of it. So I definitely, you know, thank you for bringing this forward. I think we definitely need to move forward with this with the hopes, and maybe it provides an extra incentive to get you back on. And then, of course, we can fix everything at that point. So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Is this kind of like taxation without representation?
I thought you're right, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Is this bill going to health?
It's being
Representative Robbins.
Mr. Chair, it's being laid over. The Gilman bill, I believe, is moving because that's the policy side of it. The Gilman bill will not come before this committee, is my understanding.
And this bill is strictly a tax
this
issue.
This is just the tax portion, yeah. Yes.
Representative Elkins. Any other questions from members, from the audience? Department of Revenue, I'm going to go to Chair Gomez. Okay. With that, then, Representative Robbins renews her motion that House File 4048 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House Omnibus Tax Bill. With that, is there anything else for the good of the order, members? Could we hear about tomorrow, Chair Gomez?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. We will be hearing Representative Agbaje's bill on HCMC. And so looking forward to it. Representative Nadeau, I think, will be co-presenting with her.
Okay, looking forward to that. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We are adjourned.